Thanks, Ray. Thanks very much.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Good afternoon on this Tuesday afternoon. How are you? Hope you're well. Wrapped up well. Yes, yeah. Keeping warm. -5 degrees last night. Very cold. Very cold. But because it's the beginning of the year, people are thinking about things to do with the garden. People are thinking about things to do outside. Get healthy, food, exercise, abstaining, doing something new. Anyway, with all that in mind, Mick Kelly from GIY in Waterford, that is Grow It Yourself as opposed to Do It Yourself, GIY, Grow It Yourself. We've had him on a number of occasions in the past. And if you're wondering what to be doing with the garden, with the vegetable patch, Mick is your man. He knows it all. And he put together a great book last year, the year before, which goes through month by month what you should be doing in your garden. And we said we'd have him on today. If you have any questions about what you should be doing in the garden in January, get them into us now, ray@rte.ie. That's Mick Kelly coming in after 4 o'clock today. Now, we spoke to a lovely man yesterday from Wales, Rodney Holbrook. And Rodney described to us the activities of a little mouse that every night when all of us are warm and in our beds, the little mouse goes at it and tidies up Rodney's shed. Yes, he does. And there's video evidence to prove it, because Rodney was returning to his shed over and over again and he found that little things were moved around on his workbench. Things like clothes pegs and wine corks and bits of hose pipe. So he put a video camera into a shed and he caught the mouse doing what the mouse was doing, which is tidying up the shed. As a result, Rodney is world famous now, and so is the mouse, and it's even got a name of sorts: Welsh Tidy Mouse. So that doesn't really trip off the tongue, does it? Welsh Tidy Mouse. Anyway, when we were talking to Rodney yesterday, we got Aineen Launa up on the line, and she was throwing out various theories as to why the mouse is doing what the mouse is doing. And one of them was because there's a sort of a flat box. I'd say it's about a foot long and maybe 8 inches deep. And the mouse every night piles up all the stuff that Rodney now purposely leaves out on the bench for the mouse to tidy. Anyway, in that box, there are nuts, you see. And Aina's theory was that the mouse is hiding the nuts. And every night when he comes back and Rodney has left the nuts uncovered, he puts everything back on top. That was Aina's theory. That was Aina's theory. I see in the papers today that there are other theories. Dr. Megan Jackson of University of Bristol, she studies foraging behaviour in laboratory mice. And she says, I wouldn't say that this mouse has looked at its environment and thought, hey, this is messy, I need to tidy it up. So that's not the motivation for the mouse. She also goes on to say that this isn't a behaviour that's necessary for survival. That's what she thinks. But they're still doing it night after night, even though they've probably learned that Rodney is putting the stuff back the very next day. The fact that this mouse is engaging in a pointless behaviour must mean that he finds it rewarding in some way. That's what Megan Jackson says. And she says, as humans, we get to enjoy different aspects of life. It's actually quite nice to see a mouse, or it's nice to see mice engaging in behaviour that isn't completely necessary. That's her theory. And maybe she didn't know that there were nuts underneath all the paraphernalia that the mouse is putting in the box. Dr. Johnny Cole, he studies the neural underpinnings of mouse behaviour at the Francis Crick Institute in London. Hey, Johnny, what do you do? I study the neural underpinnings of mouse behaviour at the Francis Crick Institute in London. Oh, great, great. Anyway, he'll be popular now in the pub this weekend because everyone will want to know what his theory on the Welsh tidy mouse is. Well, it's there in the paper today. He says, it would be interesting to know whether this mouse is male or female. Male and female mice build nests for warmth, and female mice build nests to rear their young during pregnancy. Given the low temperatures in the video, I suspect it might be the former. And then the person, Linda Geddes, who's writing the article, says, well, all the stuff that they're using, like clothes pegs and sticks and plastics, they're not the things that you would build a nest with because they're hard surfaces. They're not warm and cuddly. So that probably rules that out. Anyway, we got back on to Rodney Holbrook, although he told us yesterday he'd be out and about today. But he took a call from us and we asked him, did he video Welsh Tidy Mouse last night, and he said no, but he has some plans for tonight. So we're keeping in touch. We're keeping in touch with Rodney. And yes, we will be doing Mouse Watch on a regular basis here on the programme, even as its own theme tune. Afternoon and welcome to Mouse Watch. We can go over now to Wales and to Rodney Holbrook. It'll be that sort of thing. So there, if you have any theories as to what the mouse is doing, get them into us, 51551 or ray@rte.ie. And overnight to that address, John McKenna has been on to. He says, thanks for bringing that video of the Welsh mouse to my attention yesterday. It's kind of special, all right. And you can see the video on the RTE Radio 1 Instagram. And also on X, formerly Twitter. So all the socials there. The video of the mouse is up there. And while we're at animals and rodents and maybe cats that might catch mice, there's a new cat flap available. So any cat owners out there, you might know, we don't have a cat, but I've heard reports that they come and they're showing off, really. You know, they go off and they come back with a dead mouse or a pigeon or something like that. And it's not very nice when you come down to the kitchen in the morning and there's a dead pigeon on the kitchen floor. Anyway, they're doing it out of the kindness of their hearts. They're giving you a little present. But you're probably not feeling like that when you have to remove it. So you'll be happy to hear about this new invention. It's an AI cat flap. It's been invented and unveiled this week. A Swiss startup called Flappy are the people responsible for it. So on the side of the door facing the outside, you'll find a motion sensor and night vision camera. And Flappy, the company, says it has compiled a unique and proprietary data set over the years with a focus on diversity. This means getting lots of different kinds of cats as well as prey filmed in a variety of different lighting conditions. And the company says that its AI-powered detection system is accurate more than 90% of the time, which means your cat could still get a mouse inside, but hopefully that'll happen a lot less frequently. So what happens, I'd imagine, from reading that is your cat arrives to the cat flap with pigeon or mouse or shrew or whatever in mouth, and the AI camera goes into, you know, overdrive and it goes, oh no, that's not just a cat, that's a cat with a mouse. So you're not getting in. So until such time as the cat revisits without the prey in his mouth, they won't be let in. So that'll be exciting for some people who have cats. Yeah, it is cold out there. I remember a couple of years ago we started talking about soup in January and it got a huge response. And I might start making soup again. The problem, I suppose, with soup is you make a big lot of it and then you have a nice bowl yourself and you're thinking, oh, I'll have that for the rest of the week. And then come the next day, you're not in the humour for soup. I'm wondering what are the recipes that are warming you up at home. Is it a soup or is it a hot pot? Is it something you sort of revert to every January to get you through the post-Christmas blues? Because it's not just about the weather and the cold. There's a sort of an atmosphere around January, isn't it? Because we've all built up the Christmas and we've done what we did and we overindulged and it was all sparkly and bright and colourful and turkey and ham and cranberry sauce, and now that's what it's like sometimes. And you need something like chicken soup or whatever it is. So whatever you're offering, whatever recipe you revert to in January, do let us know. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Whether it's a soup or a hot pot or one of those tray bakes, whatever works for you, do fill us in and we'll share it with our audience. Now, this week, they've decided, those people in charge, that we would be the radio show that brings to you the 6 Eurovision hopefuls for this year's Eurosong content. So at the end of January on the Late Late Show, there will be the Eurosong competition, same as has happened over the last few years. And you will be asked to vote on one of 6 songs. And whoever gets the most votes from you at home and the national jury and the international jury will represent Ireland in the Eurovision Song Contest in Malmo this year. Now, it's sort of big news because we've been resting on our laurels for quite some time. That we could always say, despite the fact that we weren't doing too well, that we were the kings of Eurovision, the kings and queens of Eurovision, because we had won it the most times. That was so up until May of last year when Sweden won. So they've won it 7 times, we've won it 7 times. It's not beyond the realms of possibility that Sweden on home turf could win it for the 8th time. So there's an extra sort of pressure, I suppose, on us to get it right this year. We'll get it right eventually. We'll get it right eventually. And remember, we did it. Didn't we do it three times in a row? Remember Mary Kennedy coming on and she was welcoming people to the Eurovision Song Contest sort of as if it was, you know, a regular annual event from Dublin. So we need to get our act in order this year. Yesterday we met song number one and act number one, Erica Cody. Yes. No one can love me like I do. That was her song, Love Me Like I Do. And we'll be meeting act number two and listening to song number two. And I think it's a really good idea that they're, you know, unveiling them early on so people can get used to them. And then when it comes to voting on the last Friday in the month, they will know what they're voting on as opposed to hearing them for the first time and then have to make their decision very quickly within an hour or so. Now, 51551, ray@rte.ie. Maybe that mouse is a first cousin twice removed of Mr. Jingles from the Green Mile, says Donald. Yeah. Currently making potato and leek soup. That's a nice one, isn't it? Potato and leek soup. It's the onions, isn't it? And the potatoes first, and then you add in the leeks, and then you zzz it all up. And some of the recipes suggest that you leave it a little bit lumpy, that you don't completely liquidise it, because then it becomes baby food. Hi from Malta. Hello, Malta. Can we have the Malta vote, please? Making a Guinness pie at the moment. Chili in Malta. Regards, Susie Brown. Susie Brown, you'll have to give us more details. Is that a Guinness pie with beef? I would imagine it is. Or is there mushrooms in it? How much Guinness do you use? Etc, etc. Yeah, 51551, ray@rte.ie. We had this chat over, I think I mentioned it the other day. We had this chat over the Christmas. We were driving somewhere. And somebody, there was something on and we were all singing along to it. I think it was Boys Don't Cry by The Cure. And everybody knew the words, all four of us. And we were thinking, if we were in a movie and if we were doing that classic scene made famous by Wayne's World, that you sing along, you lip sync along to a song, what song would it be? We couldn't come up with anything. We couldn't agree on anything. And I was just wondering, do you have one of those? You know, the song that everybody knows and you can do the head banging or you can sing along, lip sync type thing. And mentioning Wayne's World, of course, they did it brilliantly to this one. And because it's January and I think it's the month that you have to play this song in its entirety, you're contractually obliged to do it. We said we'd play it for you today. Good afternoon. Here you go, from 1975. That's when it was recorded, was released, I think it was a hit in early 1976. Then it was a hit again in 1991 after Freddie Mercury died. It was a hit again in 1992 after it was featured in Wayne's World. I was just looking up some trivia about it. Freddie Mercury once said of the lyrics to Bohemian Rhapsody that it was just random rhyming nonsense. And Kenny Everett, the great Kenny Everett, was the first DJ to play Bohemian Rhapsody. So there you go. Now, I always make my own homemade veggie soup at this time of the year. And this is Kitty. And always with a potato to thicken it up. My nephew gave us a real giggle when he was a preschooler, as he always insisted he hated cooked vegetables. Yet he absolutely loved anti-Kitty soup. We let it go for at least a year before we kindly informed him that Kitty's soup was made entirely of cooked vegetables. So there. Ray, freeze leftover soup in 1 or 2 litre milk cartons, always ready for a cold day, says Kathleen in Roscommon. Thanks, Kathleen. One of the reasons we're not selecting the right song for Eurovision is that we do the selection on The Late Late Show, which has a demographic of 45 years and over. Eurovision has become a young person's competition. Sweden are successful and still have a national song contest, says Tom and Carla. They do. It's a big, big deal up there. And then back to the soup. Add a sprinkle of crispy bacon over the leek and potato soup when serving. Delish, says Trish. Delish with Trish. If you go onto Facebook to Janie Godley's page, she does a funny voiceover of the Welsh Tidy Mouse. Regards, D. McVeigh. Okay, now I haven't heard this, so I'm hearing it for the first time, as are you. So she's got the video, which is available up on Radio 1 socials there, of the little mouse, the Welsh tidy mouse thing. We spoke to Rodney about him yesterday. He tidies up during the night And this is Jane Godley doing the sort of, I suppose, the internal dialogue of the mouse, I'd imagine. Yeah, yeah, here we go. Let's see what it sounds like.
Skate in this place. Right, I'll put that there. It leaves that out. There's a wee peg. What's that? Another wee peg. Put that there. Every night he leaves and just, oh, there pegs. I just like a wee tidy bench. Right, that looks like a wee lid of something. There's another wee lid of something. You'll be looking for that wee lid later. There you go. Put that there. Tidy that up.
Yeah, maybe with the pictures. It would work. Back to soup. Having the carrot and ginger soup, that's great, says somebody. And if we want to win the Eurovision, back to Eurovision again, then we're going to have to bring back Johnny Logan, either to sing himself or write a song for someone. We've asked him on numerous occasions, not that RTE have asked him, but we've asked him on the show. Just after putting your bread and butter pudding into the oven now to make custard. Your bread and butter pudding? No, it's not. It's mine bread and butter. But the person has just put their bread and butter pudding into the oven and they're going to make custard. There's there. Malmo is pronounced Malmö. I didn't know that. And made 20 ton of soup in work today, says that person. And finally, for the moment, I make soup once or twice a week in January and February. Swear by it. The trick is a hand blender and good bread. Don't skimp on good bread and lots of grains in it. In my soup, I put olive oil, onions, garlic, potatoes, carrot, peas, sea salt, pepper. I could eat it for breakfast, lunch and dinner. It's -8 in Prague, so it's really needed here. And more coming in there, and we'll get to those. Now, we're looking for two of you to come on after 4 o'clock and take part in our Who Done It quiz. There you go. Yeah, two quizzers, three questions, clues as well, and a prize. And this week, we've teamed up with the Fairways Hotel in Dundalk, and they're proudly part of the I Knew It collection of hotels. It's set in the heart of Dundalk, perfectly located between Dublin and Belfast. The Fairways Hotel welcomes guests with warm hospitality, gorgeous rooms, and memorable evenings at the Brasserie, the hotel's restaurant. And during your stay, you can discover Dundalk, enjoy a delectable afternoon tea, and enjoy a nightcap before a blissful night's sleep. Fairwayshotel.ie. Fairwayshotel.ie. Now, here's your qualifying question on this Tuesday afternoon. Is Cillian Murphy from Cork or Connecticut? Golden Globe winner Cillian Murphy, is he from Cork or Connecticut? Answers to 0818715925. 0818715925. And good luck with that. And we could be talking to you after 4 o'clock.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Harry Biker's sausage casserole, a must at this time of the year, says Alison. And do you remember Murph? They had two places in Dublin and one in Cork. They used to do a French onion soup. I haven't tasted anything like it since. Has anyone got the recipe? Matty in Lennon wants Murph's French onion soup recipe. Now, there you go. It's like being back on Fix It Friday. Good morning, afternoon from Oregon. We are eating leftover ribeye roast chili, no beans, with honey, hatch chili and cornbread. Nice, Brian, nice. Now, Miniature Masterpieces, 100 Years of Irish Stamps, is a joint exhibition between An Post and the National Print Museum that celebrates a century of postage stamps in Ireland. The exhibition is open now at the National Print Museum. And joining us in studio to tell us all about it is the curator of the exhibition, Stephen Ferguson. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Ray.
That's not your official title. Your official title is
I am
Company Archivist.
Company Archivist.
That's it.
Yep.
And you're also the curator of the exhibition.
That's right.
That's
yep.
it. And we've spoken before when Sinead was down there and I met you in the GPO as well. This is very exciting because it's a history of Ireland through stamps.
It is. The idea is that when we were coming to the end of the decade of centenaries, I thought that if we took the little bits of paper that we put on our envelopes and if we looked at them a little bit more closely, you'd actually be able to see the way Ireland has developed over the last 100 years. Yeah. Because it shows our history, our culture, the things we're proud of, sometimes maybe the things that we'd like to be rather than the way we actually are. So I thought I'd get in touch with the print museum because they're obviously interested in the printing and design side of things. And we worked together to produce this little exhibition, Miniature Masterpieces, which is on show in the print museum and will run until beginning of May, I hope.
So the first Irish stamp was sort of a leftover from our connection with Great Britain.
That's right. Yeah. As soon as we became independent in 1922, the boss of the post office at the time, he was a man who had actually started his career in Cork as a post office clerk. So he was aware of the power of stamps. So he said, I'll organise a competition, But in the meantime, I want to get the permission of the British authorities to overprint the ordinary British stamps, which had King George on them, and overprint them in Irish. So that was agreed to. The King, King George at the time, was a very keen stamp collector. And I think he was happy enough for his head to be overprinted in Irish as long as he got some copies of the stamps for his own collection. So
the, they were different.
Because they were different. They agreed. They agreed. And
what was overprinted on his face?
We had the words Realtas Shaladoc Naharan, 1922. So Provisional Government of Ireland, 1922. That was put onto all these British stamps at the time. And they were printed very quickly, printed by a couple of different firms in Dublin. And if you go to the exhibition, you'd be able to see the slight differences in printing that was there, because there's always little differences and little flaws that stamp collectors like to look at. So they were the first ones, as you say, a little bit of a leftover from previous times, but they served the purpose very quickly.
Okay. And then this national competition for the design of the first official Irish stamp.
That's right. The Postmaster General, Mr. Walsh, as he was, he advertised in the papers for a public competition for people to come up with some ideas for what could go on our new stamps. So the winners were to get £25, big amount of money at the time, and they were to restrict themselves to designs of a symbolic nature.
Right.
So you had a lot of designs coming in with shamrocks, with wolfhounds, with round towers, with a woman representing Ireland. These were the ideas. A few people disregarded the instructions. One man sent in a picture of Michael Collins. It was struck out. Somebody else managed to put in King George still on a stamp. That was struck out as well. So there was about 800 entries. Right. Very big, very successful competition. And from that, then, the four successful designs for our first set of ordinary permanent stamps, they were selected from that.
Now, were the designs, were they drawn by these people or were they notional? Do you know what I'm saying? Were they saying a map of Ireland or were they drawing a map of Ireland?
No, people submitted actual designs.
Actual designs, so that, right.
Some of them were by noted artists and experienced people in the art and graphic world. Others were simply put in by ordinary people who had an idea. Okay. And they almost drew them on an envelope or something and sent them in. So there was a big range of skill and interpretation there.
Okay. And those four were, one of them was a map of Ireland.
The map of Ireland was the one, a very clear symbol of independence. There was the Sword of Light, or on Clive Sulish, which is a sign of resurgence in Irish mythology. There was the Arms of the Four Provinces. So you had, you know, Munster, Leinster, Connacht and Ulster. And you also had a Celtic cross design, which, interestingly enough, had been used before independence on a Sinn Féin propaganda label. And Arthur Griffith, who was the man chairing the selection committee, he knew the artist for that stamp and he wanted the Celtic cross to feature in some form on a final Irish stamp design.
Was that fair?
I think it was by a lady called Lily Williams, who was a very well-known portrait artist at the time. So I think she would have been up there in the running without a little bit of extra help.
And interestingly, the map of Ireland had no border.
That was something which was a little bit controversial at the time. It was a nice idea and a clear idea to show Irish independence. Technically, I think it was correct because I don't think the border had quite come into effect, or Northern Ireland hadn't said it didn't want to be part of the new southern state. But it was perhaps a little bit provocative and there was a little bit of controversy at the time over that.
Now, how long did those four stay in place?
Nearly 50 years.
Okay,
they were around for ages, so that anybody of my age will remember these stamps pretty well because they lasted a very long time. And
so when did the fashion or the trend of changing them quite frequently and maybe including things, cultural things, pop cultural things, when did that start?
That is really, it's the difference between the ordinary everyday stamps, which are on sale all the time, and the special or commemorative stamps.
Right.
So the first special one issued in 1929 for Daniel O'Connell. It was the centenary of Catholic emancipation, very important event in Irish history. So there's a portrait of O'Connell on three stamps, and they were the first special ones. So that,
And then it became a thing, I suppose, the fact that King George was on the British stamp, so we were honouring our own heroes,
yes,
and that became a thing. And so all the greats had stamps, did they?
Yeah. And anybody, you, generally speaking, up until very recently, you had to be dead.
Right.
Now, that's changed in recent years. But I suppose the idea was that your contribution to Ireland and Irish culture or Irish history or Irish nationality had to be assessed carefully.
Who did this assessing?
There was a committee, right, as there always is. And in the early days, there was a selection committee which looked at ideas for Irish stamps. And then they would go to the government then for final approval. And then there was also another committee which looked at the artistic side of stamps, so that there were well-known people like Jack Yeats or Sean Keating, George Atkinson. These were eminent artists at the time, so that there were clever, knowledgeable and distinguished people who were assisting the post office in deciding what stamps should be produced and how they should be produced.
And were people aware that, I suppose, there was a, although it'd be very small, there were a shop window to the world, because these stamps were on letters that were going all over the world and people were seeing them. And I suppose people, were they or were they not thinking, this is saying something about us, what we think about ourselves?
Exactly. That's very important. And it's something that people forget about, because if you think of things like our banknotes or our coinage, when we had our own stuff before, yes, it's all euros, they were only used within our country.
Uh-huh.
But stamps went to every corner of the globe, and they said something about how we saw ourselves as Irish people. So you'd have famous Irish sportsmen, literary people, distinguished patriots, and religion was quite important in the early days. There was a lot of emphasis on Ireland as a
land. Did John Charles McQuaid, did he get a stamp?
Well, he hasn't got a stamp so far.
Has he not?
No,
right,
he hasn't.
Right.
But there were others who probably did deserve stamps as well. So gradually, as we became more outward looking from, say, the 1970s onwards, we began to put more emphasis on honouring people throughout the world who had made a big contribution to things.
Irish people or non-Irish
people? And some foreign people.
So who non-Irish people? Who?
Well, say somebody like Mahatma Gandhi, for instance, back in the late 1960s, there were two stamps issued for him. John F. Kennedy, now, very strong Irish connection, and also a stamp there that would be emphasising the connection between Ireland and America.
Important.
And him as the first Catholic president of America, that was something that was important too.
Mm.
So stamps solidified connections between countries, and they accentuated our own sense of nationality and identity.
Mm. So a lot of the special ones have honoured people like Phil Lynott and other artistic people over the years. I'm wondering, is it something that On Post would be interested in? Because it's a huge thing, isn't it, to have your face on a stamp?
It's very important. And as I said, in recent years, live people have been honoured on stamps as well.
And honour is the word there. And I'm just thinking, because we don't have an honours list in this country. The stamp of the state, that this could be a thing, couldn't it?
Yeah, no, it's something which, it's not official policy or anything like that,
yeah,
but it is an honour to be featured on a stamp, as it is an honour for an artist or a designer
to design
a stamp for Ireland as well.
Yes,
yeah. So you're right, we don't have any honours system, but if you have done something for the country, you have a reasonable expectation at some stage, perhaps, of featuring on a stamp.
And the I suppose the act of designing a stamp is a particular skill, because it's so small.
That's why I wanted to call this exhibition Miniature Masterpieces,
because
people forget just how hard it is to design and draw something at postage stamp size, half an inch, couple of centimetres at most. So that somebody like Michael Craig is an artist who did a lot of architectural stamps for us, and he designed these at actual postage stamp size.
Right.
So his eyesight and his skill in actually doing a building is amazing.
He didn't do a big one
No. I mean, very often they're done at maybe four or five times and then reduced.
Yeah.
His technique, he was able to do it, was to do it at stamp size.
Now, an Irishman, I don't know if he had a stamp in his honour, but he was hugely important in the development of stamps worldwide. This man...
Yes.
Henry Archer.
Henry Archer, we're going back to the middle of the 19th century.
Yeah.
And the very first stamps, I put one here just in the album here, was a penny black. People will remember that.
Yes.
The first English stamp. But it had to be cut from the sheet of stamps with a scissors or a knife. so that you'd get sort of very jagged edges, and it wasn't a good system. Henry Archer was a businessman in Dublin and an entrepreneur in many ways, and he came up with the idea of applying perforations to stamps. There were perforations for other things, but nobody had thought of using them for stamps. So he sold his idea to the post office as a prototype for something like £4,000 back in 1855 or thereabouts. Mm. And from then on, you can easily separate your stamps without tearing them.
He didn't get a stamp in his honour.
He hasn't so far.
I love the way you say he hasn't so far. Now the initial official stamp was the result of a competition. Have Unpost done many competitions over the years?
There have been occasional competitions over the years. The ones that were introduced in 1922, as I said, stayed for about 50 years.
Yes.
Then there was another competition, an international competition, which really was only open to established artists, international artists.
Right.
And a German designer won that particular competition. And there were stylized Celtic animals introduced on stamps. That was his idea. Children's art has been another one. There have been competitions run, and children's artwork has been judged, and the best ones have been shown on maybe Christmas stamps or things like that. So occasionally there are still competitions.
Yeah. Are we ready for another big one?
I think we, at the moment, I'm watching the stamps carefully, because so many people don't send letters anymore. Mm. They don't buy stamps anymore.
Yeah.
And we can't change the way the world is going. But I hope that people will continue to use them and appreciate these little treasures.
But one way of generating interest in stamps and letter sending is to do a big competition.
Yes.
Is it not?
Yes, no, it is. We can certainly think about that. The way things work is if the artistic committee, which looks at stamps, if there's a particular subject, they may know a designer or a group of artists who are skilled in that particular field.
Yeah.
And they will invite them to submit possible designs for a stamp like that.
I just like the whole throwing it out to everybody, in the 1920s.
Well, that has its merits. You and I might get successful on that point.
Yeah. Do you have a favourite?
I like some particular stamps from 1940s to 1960s. We issued one small set of stamps specially to send on airmail letters. And they were very nicely designed and very nicely printed. And I like them because they combine a sense of Irishness. They have an angel going over various landmarks in Ireland, like Lough Derg, Glendalough, the Rock of Cashel. But the artistic and cultural element, it also has a little bit of good marketing there, because these were going abroad and they were showing beauty spots in Ireland at the same time.
Like a little lad. For Bord Fáilte.
Yeah.
And you mentioned earlier on that people who collect stamps are looking out for mistakes, and they're the ones that are worth the most money.
Yes.
Is there any over the years from Ireland?
Yes, there are. I mean, fortunately, we don't make too many mistakes, but occasionally there are some. I can think of one. Just off the top of my head, there was one going back to the 1970s when we issued a stamp for the Bicentenary of American Independence. And that had a picture of Benjamin Franklin, the famous American patriot and postmaster, I should add, in America. But there was a little bit of silver missing from his particular stamp. So I have that one in the exhibition in the print museum.
How much is that worth?
Well, you would be able to buy yourself a modest holiday.
All right,
a modest holiday for that.
If you had it. And just as stamps are less popular, I suppose collecting stamps is less popular as well.
It is less popular in the days when you and I were young. We maybe collected them and swapped them with our friends. Mm. Nowadays, it tends to be more older people, but they are still there, because if people have an interest in a subject, whether it's music or art or sport, they can buy the stamps that relate to that and collect them.
Okay, yeah. Now, miniature masterpieces will run at the National Print Museum in Dublin until May 2024. It's well worth a visit. And the exciting thing is that you have the facility there for people to design their own stamp.
I do. We have, with the help of some digital experts and technological people, I have one little computer where you can look at all the stamps we've ever issued. And the other one, you can try your hand at designing a stamp within a certain template. You can add the value, you can add the colour, and you can add area into it. So it gives you an idea of what's involved.
Yeah, well, and the next logical step, Stephen, is that there will be a national competition to design a stamp. Anyway,
I'll look into that as soon as I go back to GBO.
Stephen Ferguson, company archivist with An Post. Thanks so much for coming in and good luck with the exhibition. Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Jackie's been on. Says, we found a sort of light stamp in a stamp fair in Barcelona. It was bought in a huge bundle for €1. We framed it. Oh, that was a good find, wasn't it? Where is the print museum? Shane O'Neill wants. Well, there's a thing called Google, but we'll find out where it is. It's Haddington Road in Dublin. Haddington Road. There you go. Shane, that's there. Now, all this week, we are introducing you to the 6 Eurovision hopefuls who will perform on the Late Late Show at the end of the month. One of them will be chosen, and that person, that act, will go and represent Ireland in this year's Eurovision Song Contest. Today, it's the turn of Elsha. Good afternoon, Elsha.
Hello.
Spelt A-I-L-S-H-A, in case, because people will want to Google you, won't they?
Exactly.
Yes.
That's it.
And it's just, you've just one name.
One name, yeah. It's a weird one.
Yeah. And did your parents explain why you were called Elsha, spelt Elsha?
They heard the name, they liked the name, but they based it off, there's this big rock off the coast of Belfast in the ocean called Elsa Craig, so I was named after a rock.
Right.
Yeah. There you go.
And the music you do is...
It's rock.
This sounds like
Alan Partridge.
Exactly.
It's all fixed.
It's connected.
Yeah, exactly.
How would you describe it? Because it's rock, but it's sort of...
like alt rock, alt metal.
Yeah.
Depending on the song, sometimes it's heavier, sometimes it's not. But I'm just up to just experimenting with my music.
And there's a big revival of rock in Ireland, isn't there?
Massive. There's a huge alternative community here. And that's kind of part of why I wanted to submit a song to Eurosong that was like this, in this genre, and just kind of give a bit of space for that.
Give us your thoughts on the Eurovision then.
I love it. I think it's amazing. I think, my family have been into it in recent times. My brother got us all into it, and we sit around every year, we watch it, we talk about the acts, and... personally, I'm always kind of drawn to the more alternative entries, Finland and stuff. I'm obsessed with
they're into rock. They're rock, aren't they?
Oh yeah, massively, yeah. Massively.
And it's loud and it's fast
and it's exciting. Exactly. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. Now, you're a very musical family.
Yes. Yep.
Your mother's a singer.
Singer.
Your dad's a
composer.
One of your siblings, which you know quite well, is a
singer.
And what did the other three do?
They're all in music as well. My brother Pather, actually, so he's kind of he was very involved with this whole process of submitting a song to Eurosong, but he studied world music and he specializes in Albanian folk music and we all have our own little genre. So I'm the metal rock girl, and then everyone else is a different genre.
And your dad, people know his name, Sean Davey.
Yes.
And he composed Brendan's Voyage.
Brendan's Voyage. That's
yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's the Ellen Pipes with an orchestra, and it's all very exciting and cool.
And your mum's Rita Connolly.
Yes. Yeah. So she's a singer. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, she's stunning.
That's a lovely thing to say about your mom, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I know she's listening.
All right. Brownie points.
Yeah, exactly.
Where do you need a lifter?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, and then Kathy is your sister, Kathy Davey.
Yes, yeah.
So we've come right around. We now know your name is Elsha Davey.
Exactly. Yay! The secret's out.
Yeah. Now, this is very different to what people would be used to. In Eurosong, isn't it?
I think so.
Would you like to give us some context? Your brother Pater, Albanian folk music, is that any influence on it?
He had a little bit of input into the songwriting process.
Right.
So the song is about someone who's trying to speak in Irish, but they don't remember much Irish, so it kind of speaks to the Irish experience of learning the language in school for so long, but then we don't remember a lot of it, bar a few phrases like Gutubbin, which means suddenly, and that's what the song's called. But there's a section in the song where I count to 7 in Irish, and my brother was like, no, you need to put in the 8, but make it metal, like Ocht. So that was his input, and I just think it's great.
Wow. We had a guy in And he's a comedian, and I think his thing is to promote the Irish language.
Yeah.
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 And his big joke was, when I heard the Irish for seven, I was shocked.
Oh, that's very good now. Yeah. Ah, here.
That's his excellent. Joke, not mine. I can't
I'm going to start using that. That's great.
Well, seeing shocked features in your song a lot.
It does. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And was it important to include the Irish language?
I just thought it was a fun idea, yeah. You know, and kind of like throw in those kind of golden nuggets, like a few of them that I hope, you know, people who learned Irish in school will remember.
Because your dad would remember this, and that there was a time when you had to enter the Eurovision in your native tongue.
Yeah.
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 But that was way back in the 70s. So the last time we sent an Irish song to represent us in the Eurovision was Sandy Jones. Now, I remember this song because we learnt it in primary school. I think I was in first class.
Wow, yeah.
Put on your headphones there. I don't know if you remember this.
Oh, yeah.
No, you don't remember it. But yeah. I don't think you ever heard it. You weren't born. Angels flying over the rock of Cashel.
It's very peaceful and
isn't
lovely,
it?
Yes, isn't it?
Very serene.
Very serene. Yeah, it's
cut
nice.
To 2024.
And it's like metal tin whistle.
I love yeah. Gutubbin because it is, we've all used it in essays, haven't we?
And I think it's the way that particular phrase was taught in school. The teachers yeah. were always like, Gutubbin,
yes.
you know, and it's just, people just remember it.
Fime is the kitchen nuggets. Gutubbin!
Gutubbin, exactly, yes, in every Irish essay.
Right, are you ready for this then?
I guess so.
Yes, this is it. This is when the nation gets to hear your song for the first time. Gutubbin, song B, act B, Elsha. And Will Carrot Gum
Dulgadia Leris.
Oh, yeah. I can see your tongue is slightly in your cheek.
A little bit.
A
yeah.
little
yeah,
bit. A little bit. A little bit, yeah. And there's tin whistle there because it sounds sort of Eastern European.
That was the inspiration because right. a lot of the Eastern European entries in Eurovision will like have a solo on their native
yes,
woodwind instrument.
Yes, yes.
And I was like, man, like I'd love to do a tin whistle yeah. solo. So I got a pink tin whistle from the local music shop. And
And you play the tin whistle?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So, Gutubbin, Thought too, so Eurovision. Well, it wasn't really Coachubon. There was a lot of thought went into it. Well.
Well, depends on your point of view.
So what sort of, you know, obviously it's rock, but is there anything from the Eurovision that has inspired you over the years? Any particular song?
I mean, a lot of them have, but I think 2023 Finland's entry, Karja, Cha Cha Cha, was the thing. Yeah.
I'm Will Catagum, Dulgarian Letters. Cha, 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 cha. There's a mashup there.
Yeah, you
doing? There is a mashup.
It could work. Yeah. Oh, I love it.
Ain't no tree, car, gooey, tree, shock. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. So you can now go and promote this until such time as you're on the Red Late Show at the end of the month. Six songs. Staging's going to be important.
Yep.
Yeah.
It is.
You're up for it.
Yep. I'm very up for it.
Yeah. It's exciting. I'm excited for the first time in a long time.
Yeah? Oh,
yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
I'm happy.
Yeah,
I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah, so lovely meeting you,
Elshe.
And good luck.
Thank you so
Fingers
much.
Crossed. That's
Thank
Elshe.
You.
Gotubbin is the song. Song B.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Elshe is from music royalty in this country. Her dad's Brendan Voyage is pure genius, as that person. Now, Anish Tosha now in the Pre Skeleton and Nogta and Marion Nihulawan. Gurmagan, Marion, thank you very much. 5 on 551 ray at RTE.ie. So you've heard two songs now. We've four to go. I think it's two tomorrow. It's just the way the thing fell. And one of those will represent us this year in the Eurovision Song Contest in Malmö. Now on things, comforting food for this time of the year. Jean. My mum's lamb stew is what I make, so tasty and comforting, with jigged chops, sausages, onions, carrots, parsnips and potatoes, thyme, parsley. Delicious. And you can freeze portions too, if you needs be. Now, I used to know what a jigger chop is, but I don't know anymore. I think my granny used to get jigger chops from the butchers. She'd send me with a, will you get some jigger chops there and some sausages and some meat for the dog. I just made that up because she didn't have a dog. And Jamie Oliver's beef and Guinness casserole is lovely when the weather is very cold. Delicious, is that person. And that's that, yeah. Okay, we have two people standing by waiting to play our Who Done It quiz. And whoever wins today will get a two-night stay for two people in the Fairways Hotel in Dundalk. That's one of the Ainua collection of hotels. It's set in the heart of Dundalk, perfectly located between Dublin and Belfast. The Fairways Hotel welcomes guests with warm hospitality, gorgeous rooms and memorable evenings. You can discover Dundalk from the Fairways Hotel, and it's fairwayshotel.ie, fairwayshotel.ie. Mike Deering is in Ashburn and County Meath. Hello, Mike.
Hello, Ray. How are you? How's it going?
Good. Second day back at school.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, somebody has to do it.
Yeah, how's it going for you?
Great, yeah. Sure, they're a great bunch of kids now all together. Flying it now, yeah, all together,
Can I ask you, how long have you been teaching, Mike?
Let me see now. Seven, five, two.
I hope you're not a maths teacher.
19 years. Yeah, exactly, yeah. No. I stick to the primary. 19 years, right.
19 years. Do you have a strategy? Because we were just talking about yesterday, you know, that it's a bit of a shock, isn't it, to the system. Been off for the Christmas and coming back then and the early mornings and all that. Do you have a strategy to ease people back in or not?
As in the pupils, the
yes,
class?
Yes, yeah.
Oh, my mantra is like just hit the ground running from the word go. Loads of work from like 9 in the morning straight away. Yeah. No messing.
Okay.
You'd ease them in. A small bit of homework in the first day. And
yes.
Gradually kind of just build it up.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah, I got you.
And you have children of your own?
I do indeed, yeah. Four children. They're mighty all together. They're great.
Right. And Tuesday's busy in your house?
It is, yeah. Yeah, we've swimming lessons and then we've football training and there's all sorts, yeah.
But it's great, isn't it? Embrace the madness and the chaos. That's what I think.
I agree with you 100%. You know, people complain about this and that and how tired, but I wouldn't have it any other way.
No,
it
won't last forever.
No, that's true. And so people keep on telling me, enjoy these years now because it's not going to last and this and that. Yeah.
Embrace it. Yeah, that's what I'd say.
Now,
you're up against Kathleen Cudden. And Kathleen's in Duleek in County Meath, so it's two Meath players today. Hello, Kathleen.
Very good. Hello, Ray. How are you?
Not too bad. You're whispering away there. You're tidying up after Christmas.
Yes, yeah. Trying to get back to normal.
Yeah, so have you taken down the decorations?
Yes, I have.
Did you have a real tree?
No.
No.
Because I was
just watching over the weekend there. There were people dragging them along footpaths. There were people had them in trailers, up on the top of their cars, on the back of bikes, all sorts of things. There were trees going left, right, centre. And then I saw a few just deposited on the footpath. I hope they knew that somebody was coming to collect them, that they just didn't deposit them. But anyway, you've an artificial tree.
I have, yes.
Yes. I'm with you on that one. Less hassle. Less hassle, isn't it?
Yes, it is indeed.
Yeah, yeah. Who did you have over Christmas?
Oh, I had my daughter over Christmas and some of my sons as well, yeah. And our children, wives and grandchildren.
Yeah, how many grandchildren have you got?
22.
Sorry?
22.
You've 22? I thought that was the age of them. No, you've 22 grandchildren.
Yeah, 22 grandchildren, great-grandchildren.
Ah, brilliant! Yeah. Would you? This is the sort of person. Would you buy them all? Would you buy them all a gift for Christmas?
Would
you?
Yeah, that's something for them all. Yeah.
Would you? Oh, you're great. That's brilliant.
Yeah, a little gift, for them all.
And what ages are the great-grandchildren?
They're from 3 down to a year.
Right. So quite young. You're off to bingo tonight.
Yeah, they're still young. Yeah.
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 Is that every Tuesday night?
It's on every Tuesday night, yeah.
Yeah. Where is it?
In the nannies in the league.
Right. Big prize money?
Oh, there has been,
Yeah.
Good money, yeah.
Good money, great. Enjoy that. Now, let's see if you can win on this. It might be your night on the quiz and at the bingo. So, 3 questions
each.
I give you the category and then I ask if you want a clue. If you go for a clue, Mike and Kathleen, you get a point. If you go without a clue, you get 2 points because it's more difficult. Whoever has the most points at the end is the winner. Good luck with this. Right, Mike, to you first. It's music.
Okay.
Music, yes. What do you want to do on music? Do you want a clue or not?
God, no, it depends. I'll go for, let me see, no clue. Right?
No clue, right, for 2. Yeah. Who is this? Any idea?
Blank.
No. Peter Gabriel.
Ah, of course.
Salisbury Hill. Yeah. Great song. Must play that, actually.
Of course, God.
Okay. Yeah. Don't panic. Early days. Kathleen, music for you too. Do you want a clue?
No, I'll try if it doesn't.
Okay, for 2 points, who is this? Since you were back. And it is.
It's a Cher.
No, it's not Cher. Annie Lennox. She was half the Eurythmics with Dave Stewart. That's her solo song, Walking on Broken Glass. Okay, even start. No points on the board yet. We'll move on to question 2. Mike, Irish writers. Irish writers.
Okay, no clue, please, Ray.
No clue. Okay, for 2 points, can you name this Irish writer?
I'd written novel after novel after novel, and I felt I had nothing in me. There was no seed or seedling, and I was with my agent and I said, I'm finished. He said, no, you're
Edna
not.
O'Brien.
It is Edna O'Brien, yes. Well spotted there, yes. You get 2 points for that. Now, Kathleen, Irish writers for you too. What do you want to do? Do you want a clue or not?
No, I'll try if it has a clue.
Okay. Right, good luck with this. Can you name this Irish writer for 2 points?
I think there's a lot of confusion about optimistic and pessimistic. It's thought that optimistic is good, pessimistic is bad. Well, I actually think that both optimism and pessimism are equally irrelevant to the writer, that his job is to get at the facts or the truth. And how those are perceived, I think, depends on the reader's mood.
Who's that? Any ideas?
Is it John Banville?
No way.
No.
I thought you were going to get it. Another John McGarren. John, the late John McGarren.
All right.
Yes. Okay. Now, let's see how we're doing here. Mike, you're on two. Kathleen, you've yet to score. Which means, Mike, if you get anything from the final question, it's on British comedians. Kathleen can't catch you.
Okay.
So with that in mind, what do you want a clue or not? British
comedians.
Well,
with that in mind, then I'll go with a clue, please.
With the clue, yes. Okay, that's probably the right thing to do. Here's your clue. He hosts the game show The Wheel. Can you name this comedian for 1 point?
But let's face it, soon it will turn nasty. I mean, winter is upon us. We've already had a bit of chilly. We've already looked at the heating and decided
Michael McIntyre is the correct answer. Yes, it is. Yay. Yes, he doesn't get the chance to deliver his joke. You've interrupted him there, but that's fine.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's fine. It's fine. You get a point. Kathleen.
Yes.
They didn't suit you today. We're
going
to send you out a Ray D'Arcy Show Keep Cup and lovely chatting to you. And mind yourself.
Lovely too.
Okay.
Great. Thanks.
Thanks,
very much.
Kathleen. Bye now. Bye. Mike. Well done, Mike.
Yes.
In Ashbourne, you are off to the Fairways Hotel with a person of your choice.
Lovely.
And you can go to fairwayshotel.ie to see what's in store for you. Great talking to you.
Excellent.
Good luck with
everything.
Thanks,
Ray. All the best.
Bye.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
At AXA, block drains and burst pipes don't worry us. And the kids? Well,
let them be kids.
From the little accidents to life's bigger problems, these things happen. But with AXA Home Insurance, our 24/7 emergency home assistance will have a fully qualified tradesperson with you quick. Together, we've got this. AXA, know you can. Policy terms and conditions apply. AXA Insurance DAC is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
Fly KLM Royal Dutch Airlines from Dublin O'Cork Airport and discover over 160 destinations worldwide with convenient transfers via Amsterdam. With frequent departures from Ireland, flying KLM Royal Dutch Airlines, you can take off to amazing Amsterdam, breathtaking Buenos Aires, bustling Bangkok, characteristic Cape Town, discover Dubai, or visit vibrant Vancouver. Book now at klm.ie.
Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Mick Kelly from GIY will be talking to us in about 3 minutes' time. So if you have any questions for him about the garden, particularly vegetables and the like, get them into us now, ray@rte.ie. You might be looking out the window there and looking at a patch and going, I'm going to do it this year. This is the year I'm going to do it. I'm going to grow things and I'm going to eat them. And this is my year. Well, Mick Kelly is the man, GIY, grow it yourself. So any questions for him, ray@rte.ie, or you can get them into 51551. There you go, Rachel Zegler and the Kobe Band. And that's music from the current Hunger Games movie. I like it. It has a sort of a Man of Constant Sorrow feel about it, bluegrassy. Now we go live to our Waterford studio to Mick Kelly of GIY. Hello, Mick.
How's it going, Ray? You well?
Good. Happy New Year to you.
And to yourself. Many happy returns. You have a good Christmas?
I did. And you?
Yeah, very good.
Yeah.
Nice and relaxed, raring to go again.
Yeah, now raring to go. It's cold out there, -5 in some places overnight.
Yeah.
And I suppose the last thing on people's mind is gardening. But we should be thinking about it.
January is a kind of a weird kind of interregnum month, I always feel, because it definitely has that kind of turn of the year feel where I am sort of itching to get started, but it is a little bit early to do, like to sow seeds and things like that. So I think if you think about it, like light levels are very low. We only have 8 hours of daylight at the moment. So, and the things seeds love most of all when they germinate is light. So it's a little bit early to sow seeds. We kind of wait till around the end of February or early March for most things. But then there's plenty you can be doing to get sort of organised and get yourself ready for the growing.
Now, I'm going to stop you there for a moment, because I was saying just before that song that if somebody has been threatening, and I include myself here, over the years to finally do a bit of DIYing, and you're saying 2024 is the year, so you're starting from, you know, a zero, you know, from scratch.
Yeah.
What could we be doing now? Yeah.
Yeah, well, look, I think maybe if you're starting completely from scratch and you've never done it before, I think the most important thing to think about is if I sow some seeds and do some growing this year, where am I going to put the plants? Like, when, where am I going to actually do the growing? So I think it's about figuring out in your garden, if you're lucky enough to have a garden, even if it's a small one, where could you put a couple of raised beds, or where could you do that growing in the garden? I think that's the main thing to figure out. And
what do you have to consider when you're choosing the spot?
Well, I think light's important again. Like, you want a nice sunny spot. Like, most vegetables, they prefer to be growing somewhere where they're getting light most of the day. Mm. So like, ideally south or southeast facing. Some vegetables will tolerate a bit of shade, but by and large, pick the sunniest spot you can. Obviously, like, a bit of shelter is nice as well. Like, most, you know, if you're on the side of a cliff, mightn't be great. So a nice sheltered spot's good. Definitely kind of near a water source, whether that's a hose or a water butt on the side of a garage or whatever. You know, they're the kind of main things that you're thinking about, and try and keep away from big trees, because, you know, trees tend to have root systems that will kind of go in and compete with your veggies for
your little
nutrition.
Carrots.
Yeah, exactly.
And start small, I suppose.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. Yeah. Like, I would always say to people, maybe pick 4 or 5 things that you really like to eat and focus on those. It was a bit of a kind of revelation to me that not all vegetables are the same in terms of how easy or hard they are to grow. So things like salads, quite straightforward. Things like carrots, you know, quite difficult to grow well.
Right.
So I think picking things that are a little bit easier maybe to start. So like herbs, salads, beetroot, maybe courgettes, things like that, that are a little bit easier, I think is a good idea.
See, I would have thought the carrots were the easiest to grow.
No, they're kind of temperamental. So they like, you need a very fine soil to start, because they're absolutely tiny seeds.
How do I know if I have a fine soil or not?
Well, like, you when you're preparing to sow carrots, the soil would need to be raked really, really well that you have a very fine kind of surface to sow them into.
Mm.
They're tiny seeds. So basically, if you've got big clumps of soil, the carrot seeds will fall down, could fall down in between two clumps of soil and end up way too deep. So like really, really fine, almost snooker table fine. And they're nearly the only vegetable that you have to be that particular about what you sow them into.
Right.
They're also, if you think about it, you sow a carrot seed on the surface of the soil practically, and then it goes down into the soil, the root, and it's that root that we're eating. So if that root sort of comes across hard soil or stony soil, stones in the soil, it'll just stop.
Just gives up, does it?
Yeah, more or less. Or it'll
come
fork.
On, carrot.
I know, yeah, up your game.
Yeah,
so it'll fork, and you end up with a forked carrot, which is not as fun as it sounds. So, like, yeah. I think... nice deep stone-free soil is what you need with carrots.
Okay.
So they're a little temperamental.
So that's for beginners like me. And this is the year I've tried in the past with you, Mick, and other people, and I failed. And it's hanging over me. I want to do it. I really do want to do it. So
yeah,
this
well,
is my
look,
year.
Ray. You know, I think we've talked about this before.
Yeah.
Like, growing your own food is a life skill. Like, it there's a fair amount to learn. I think on the surface of it, it's fairly straightforward, but there's lots to learn. And so, like any life skill that's worth happening, I think you need to get yourself sort of
put the effort in,
skilled up, and,
yes,
and exactly, yeah,
yeah,
yeah, put
yeah.
The, so go on a course. This is a great time of year to go on a course, whether it's online or in person, learn how to do it with people like ourselves in DIY or others, and get yourself skilled up and just give it a try and keep trying, you know.
See, I'm learning the drums at the moment, so I'm limited in the time I have my very busy social calendar. But
yeah, well, look, banging drums is not going to put food on the table. Right?
That's
all I'll say.
Talk to David Grohl about that.
Well,
anyway,
true.
Yeah.
Very true.
So right now, for people who've been doing it, and they have a sort of a yearly cycle. What's in the cycle at the moment for January?
Yeah, well, as I said, like, try not to sow your seeds too early.
Yeah.
Hold off. Like, think not about what the weather's like now, but what the weather will be like in 6 to 8 weeks when you're planting out the little seedlings you're starting off now. So generally, you know, we don't really start the seed sowing in earnest until March, April, May. But at the moment, it's about getting ready, like definitely ordering seeds. Like I put in a seed order every year. I love ordering seeds. I love perusing seed catalogues because I'm a bit of a gardening nerd like that. And, you know, I like getting particular varieties from particular vendors, like the likes of Seed Savers.
And they're obviously of different qualities, are they? How do you know what the best ones
are? Yeah, like if you can, organic seeds are the way to go. Right. It means that the plant that the seeds were taken from were organic. Mm. Obviously, like there's fantastic Irish heritage varieties of certain vegetables that you can get. There's some lovely kind of like smaller seed merchants like Brown Envelope Seeds in Cork and so on. Like you can shop around a bit. So get your seed order in. I usually spend about €80 a year, I would say, on seeds, which is
€80.
About €80, right. And that would deliver around probably 3 or 4 grams worth of food over the year. But like I'm a bit
3,000 or 4,000 euro worth of food from €80.
Absolutely, yeah.
Right.
Now look, I'm a bit of an anorak about these things, but we worked out from a standard sort of 3 raised bed setup in a small urban garden, you can easily grow 500 or 600 euros worth of food.
Yeah.
Probably a 10 or 15x kind of multiplier in terms of how much you spend on seed to how much food you get back. So you can also order seed potatoes at this year. So most people will maybe have heard that you generally sow or plant your potatoes around Paddy's Day in March. But now is a good time to order your seed potatoes. So we grow potatoes from last year's potatoes, basically. So some of the potatoes that were harvested, you keep them back for sowing next year's crop. So you buy your seed potatoes now. And then you do a thing called chitting, which you always have to be careful saying on radio.
Yes, well done.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I got that nice. And basically,
and
chitting
is what is going? Yeah,
you know the way a potato will sprout if you leave it down the back of the press in the kitchen. You're trying to encourage that, so you basically lay the potatoes out in a flat in a shallow tray.
Aye.
And they start to sprout, and that means when you plant them in the ground in mid-March, they've a bit of a head start.
They've started to grow. Yeah, yeah.
We're also like
which variety of potato do you prefer?
So the kind of main classifications are like early and main crop. So your early potatoes are the ones that we like eating, you know, kind of the end
new
of May
potatoes,
or June.
Yeah.
New potatoes, yeah. And I like. You know, varieties like Orla and Colleen, there's lots of amazing varieties. Then your main crop potatoes, things like Queens and the more standard ones as well.
Roosters, yeah.
But like the good thing is, I suppose, like most things in the food chain now, huge amount of sort of consolidation, I suppose, of varieties. So we eat, you know, probably 2-3 varieties of potatoes now in Ireland and very little else. Whereas when you grow your own, you can kind of try lots of different varieties.
Now, I'm looking at the clock here. I have a few questions for you.
Yeah.
But before we get to that, so you're saying it's a good time to clean and clear.
Do all the things that every gardening book tells you should do and that no sensible person ever really does, like sharpen your tools, clean your potting shed, all that stuff.
Right, yeah.
But definitely, you know...
You're not very convincing on that, Mick.
No, because I never do it, so right. That's why I have a shed full of broken tools.
Okay.
But definitely, it's just about getting yourself ready, I think, for seed sowing next month.
Yeah.
So think about, you know, not just what you need to sow the seeds themselves, but where are you going to plant out those seedlings? So if you need to buy a couple or build a couple of raised beds and fill them with soil or whatever.
There's a man in Wales who has a mouse who might help you tidying up your shed and all that sort of thing. it's brilliant. You haven't heard that story?
No.
Look it up. Yeah. Danielle says, I have a polytunnel but cannot for the life of me get the carrots to grow properly. Always end up little stumps.
Yeah, there you go. That's
any tips?
That thing we were talking about earlier on. So nice deep soil.
Yeah, fine.
Make sure it's stone
free. Rake it. And then when you think it's raked enough, rake it again.
Rake it again, exactly.
There you go. What can I do with a patch of garden all grass besides my mobile home? It's like a swamp during winter. Thanks, Maria B.
Yeah, well, again, like if you want to grow food in it, I think if you've got wet ground, a raised bed is fantastic because you're putting a raised bed is just a timber frame that sits on the ground. You fill it with soil and it means you've got, you know, a nice a foot or a foot and a half of good quality sort of free draining.
Can you build that yourself? Can you build a raised bed yourself? You can. And I'm sure there's any number of videos online to show you how to do it. Yes.
Check our website, geoi.ie, okay, for that.
Now, Jimmy, I don't know if this is your area of expertise. We're about half a minute here. Yeah. I have a laurel hedge planted in 2009. It was never cut. It's now as high as the ESB pole. What time of year can I start to cut it back and get it under control?
Not really my area of expertise. No. If I can't eat it, I'm not really interested. But I think you can cut a laurel hedge pretty much any time of the year. I cut mine in September generally, just so it means I only have to do it once a year.
Okay. Mick Kelly, GIY, thanks so much for coming into our Waterford studio. Mind yourself. See you,
great,
Mick. We'll talk
thanks,
again
bye.
Soon. That's it from us. Cormac is on Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday evening.